You're listening to the Ohio Conference Cast, where we explore topics related to the workings of Ohio Conference. Here are your hosts, Bill Seymour and Thomas Dunn.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Ohio Conference Cast. This is Bill.
And this is Thomas Dunn, and we have officially hit the big time.
We are rocking now.
we have
go ahead.
You going to introduce them?
All right. Because we have Alan and Deborah Hirsch, rock stars, authors, wonderful Christian people who love everybody. Is that fair?
Everybody.
Everybody.
They publish books.
We do say, actually, like people, we say we've been in America 10 years, and we say we've never met a Christian we didn't like. And people think, you must be crazy. Yeah, but no, actually, it's true. We still haven't.
It doesn't mean they're not there.
I'm sure they're not there, but they self-select, I think.
We are here at the Missional Conference for Ohio Conference. We are in the basement of the Kidron Mennonite Church Fellowship Hall. And we asked Alan and Deborah to come down to give us some thoughts on how they are experiencing us as Ohio Conference folks, and maybe to talk a little bit about being missional in our world. Let's start with your APEST discussion.
Well, okay, that begs a lot. I mean, what is APEST for one? Well, the discussion we just had was really the significance of the typology of ministry and leadership that Paul gives us in Ephesians 4, which comes in five form: apostle, prophet, evangelist, shepherd, and teacher. And basically what I was attempting to get across is that we have a much more reduced understanding of ministry in the Western tradition because we've assiduously scripted out the apostolic, prophetic, evangelistic, leaving us pretty much with the shepherd or the pastor and the professor, the teacher, as being the only orders of ministry. So I believe that this is actually bequeathed to us a fatal flaw. It came very early on in the church, and it round about the Christendom period, about the 4th century, where basically we've taken out the apostolic, prophetic, evangelistic, and therefore unable to find maturity and fullness in Christ as a result. And I think it's a commentary on church history since. So yeah, what I was trying to say, we can factor it back in because God has really put it into us. And one of the key factors is that we've got to try and find a way to incorporate these back into our understanding, our orders of ministry.
And I heard a little bit in the discussion because Ohio Conference churches, by and large, fall into the same trap that you talked about. We're mostly comprised of shepherds and teachers in leadership positions. And that's true in our conference. And you were talking a little bit about ways to start to move away from that. So I'd be interested in hear a little bit and tell a little bit of our listeners, what are some tangible steps to get towards that fuller five-step or five-fold ministry?
Well, I know for us, when we began taking the text seriously in our first church back in Melbourne, it was actually quite revolutionary for us. But we took some very simple steps at the beginning, just shifting, and it was more to do with language at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like we moved from being a pastoral team to being a ministry team, recognizing that not all of us on the team were actually pastorally gifted, because we found that if we wore the label pastor, like Al, for instance,
Suck at it.
You know, he wasn't the greatest pastor.
No. I could do it, but it just didn't give me life. In fact, it drained me out.
Yes, it drained him out. But, you know, and he was the senior minister in a sense. So people would expect him just in little ways, you know, to do all the visitations at hospital or to do the pastoral stuff. And we had to release him from that and help the community to realize that that's not his prime gifting. Again, it's not. Doesn't mean you can get away with not pastoring or not caring and not loving people, but it frees him to actually move into the gifting that God has given him. And so what we did was we formed a team, called it a ministry team, not a pastoral team, and identified each of the gifts. And it was really quite amazing for us because we had five people on our ministry team who actually each had the primary of one of them. So we had a full-orbed ministry team, which was just wonderful for us. And then what we began to do, and I was primarily prophet and secondarily shepherd, but what I did, or what each of us did, was then began to identify those with similar giftings within our church. And then we began to work with them and help to develop their giftings and callings. So I developed, you know, prophetic ministry, and also the guy that was our kind of quintessential pastor, if you like, developed a pastoral team. And then they were the people named to do the pastoral care, to do the visitations, to look after the community in a way. So the rest of us were able to do what we were called and gifted to do. So it was quite revolutionary for us. But again, it starts with the little things of changing language, not labeling somebody something they're not, because people then have expectations of that person.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets really tricky.
So to make that even more tangible then, and I don't know if your story would speak into this, but then what about when money's involved? So for most of our churches, and Bill and I are both pastors, and we are the full-time paid pastor, that's our title. I like that idea. Do you have any thoughts or experience on, so then is the pay scale divided between five people, or do you still have one full-time paid and you kind of divide that out, or how have you seen that work out?
Okay, well, we did something a little bit different again with that. We actually worked on our ministry team that the pay was according to need, which is a little bit more radical for some people. So, you know, one of our pastors who was the pastor, Peter, you know, he had four children. So he had a lot more need. But we also, and I think I mentioned this earlier, is that we also had, like, all of us had bivocational roles, because we really felt like we needed to be engaged in the broader community and not just invested in the church primarily. It's always important for us to actually be out in the world and rubbing shoulders with people that don't yet know Jesus.
So that's a good segue into one of the other things that we have been learning from you. And that is that we cannot do church the way that we have been doing church, in that broad sense, taking a European model from hundreds of years ago and trying to make it work in our context here. One of the scarier things that I heard you say was the statistic. Was when someone gets saved and we bring them into the church, in 3 to 5 years, they have no more meaningful relationships with people outside the church. That is frightening. But it sounds like in the church in Melbourne that you're talking about, that you tried to eliminate that chance a little bit by making the ministry team, the paid professional people, have other roles outside.
Yeah, I would say, like, this idea of bivocational, which actually is quite a strong movement now in the States now, particularly in the missional conversation, is helping people be engaged locally in the church, but also actually model something that we're asking most of the people to do. We're asking most of the people in our churches to be bivocational in some sense. And the other good side about it is that we, by being involved outside, we also extend our skill set. We're not overly reliant on, you know, waking up when we're 50 and we have no other skills other than pastoring a church. And we then become captive to the kind of agenda of the local church because, hey, you can't challenge the kind of, you know, the boat that you're kind of sailing on. Mm-hmm. So for us, it was a way of invigorating ministry and also allowing a lot more people into the ministry. And also allowing, one of the things I think in the New Testament, I think is very, very important for us to recognize that ministry is not something you have to be paid for. It's who you are first and foremost. And ministry can be expressed in every sphere and domain of society. Some are called to minister in the church, but everyone else is called to minister sometimes in family or in their workspace, or helping people recognize that they are ordained into ministry as soon as they're baptized into the faith is what Jesus gives them, agency. And we're to recognize the equal agency of everyone. So we work very hard to kind of break down that clergy-laity divide, which does not exist in the New Testament.
Yeah. So that, one question was raised in this one of the sessions earlier, and it said that there's a kind of a primary motivator that we see in our conference of fear, and that we see our churches getting smaller and we see our churches getting older. And so some of these things you're talking about are happening. The hands are being forced. Sometimes pastors can't be paid full-time because the churches are small and they can't afford it. Sometimes churches need to look at different ways because they're either close their doors or change. Have you seen that be a healthy motivator? Have people been able to do some life-giving things out of fear, or does that motivation need to be set aside and there needs to be a different motivator than fear?
I've seen both. I have seen many times actually where a church can no longer actually support someone full-time, whatever. And so the ministry goes, but actually they no longer can call someone into ministry, but that forces them to discover their own capacity as ministers. Mm. If they will, they actually have got everything they need to get the job done. I just think they don't often realize it. So, and sometimes they don't even want to minister back after that, you know, in terms of the normal sense of the term. I think, but attaching ministry to money, I think, is a mistake. Mm-hmm. Both for the insider of that, I mentioned before in one of the sessions, I think, all blurs for me, about it's hard to get a person to understand something when their salary depends on them not understanding it.
Yeah.
When we become so quick, our salaries and our children and the future of our families are also bound up with my being paid by the church. It means that I'm no longer can call that church into change or to when I need to, because I'm now completely co-opted. I'm a chaplain to a system that really holds me in hostage. Mm-hmm. And it's really problematic, because we then become the insiders that don't want the change, because my own economic system actually requires me to foster the status quo. And I think it's really problematic. And again, what we see in the New Testament, but also in churches like China, where they know they don't have paid staff and they don't have all the stuff we think we need to get the job done, but they do a pretty good job of it. And people, you know, the body, Jesus will provide for us. He's promised that to us, right? But it just doesn't have to be a singular way of doing it. You can get personal support, or you can get bivocational, or you can get some institutional support, mix and match, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be either the standard old way of actually the congregation has to pay. Mm-hmm. We can find other ways to do it. Do entrepreneurial work, you know, start a cafe, or launch a little business on the side that the church can run a business and harvest, you know, the profit for what, you know. There's so many ways to do it. Just mm-hmm. I think we just got to dream. Think outside the square.
And we're seeing it too, not just in churches, but in church planting organizations. Like, we're very connected with one in particular that does a lot of work in Europe. And originally, you know, the church planters that were in Europe were getting full salary or support from mm-hmm. from the home state here, and that's starting to dwindle. People are not giving as much now for that sort of support, so they're actually being very creative, and they're having to come up with ideas because the funds are not there, and it's actually producing a lot of creativity, which is great. So I think we have overly relied on the salary coming in, and I think it's made us not be as creative as what we can be.
Often I think of it this way, right? I mean, most of us have buildings. Now, in business, I mean, a building has got to be, it's a productive use of resources, right? We invest a huge amount of money into them, and really they ought to be used to kind of create capital. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are capital, but they are to produce money. Most of our buildings are only used once a day, or once a day a week.
For a couple hours.
For a couple of hours, yeah. And then it lies fallow. Mm-hmm. Why not create a community center, have a medical facility there, or a counseling facility, or having a kids club, or keep it working, and these can actually pay. We can use our buildings to actually generate income and become a community center.
Yep, connect with the
community.
We
shape our buildings, mm-hmm. and then they shape us. If, in other words, it's just a bad use of resources if we just got it there for like 2-3 hours a week. Yeah. We can use it for other things. Start a cafe, coffee club. I don't know. You can dream up anything.
Yeah.
Well, as a full-time professional paid pastor, I officially don't like you anymore. So thank you. Well, no, but I appreciate the challenge. I'm in the second half of my ministry life, I think. Retirement is distant, but not it. I can see it out there. And where I never really cared about security before, now I do, because in 15 to 18 years, that's going to be a thing.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And so my heart says, we need to do all of these things. But my family and my security says, we need to do all of these things in 18 years.
And then someone else can do that risk-taking nonsense.
We just need to keep going for now. Yeah. But I'm guessing that I'm not the only one there.
No, no. Look, I
maybe not even the only pastor there. I know that in our congregational discussions, we were a couple of years ago thinking that maybe it would be good to drop my time. Well, I was thinking that. My elders steadfastly refused to consider that seriously because they had better faith than I did. But I think also there is this notion that we're not a fully functioning church if we don't have a full-time pastor.
Yeah. Well, and our people care for us. They don't want to be the ones that cut our salary.
Right. And I have learned, at first I was a little frustrated about their inability to look at this, but now I feel all warm and fuzzy, and I mean that. They had my back because they love me, and I am just full of appreciation for that. Yeah.
But it's interesting, I would say, if you've taken the challenge then and say, you know, you have skills. I mean, I think pastors have real skill that in the corporate world could be paid for. I mean, like coaching, resources.
We need you to say that one more time.
Pastors have some skills that actually people will pay a lot of money for. So, you know, if you did take a step out and you did enter into personal development or coaching kind of work, it could pay $100 an hour. Sometimes it can be $1,000 an hour. And actually, it's a reasonable way of actually engaging people in their lives. It's a way of extending your pastoral gifts. Preaching, I mean, I think pastors are better at words than just about anyone else. I mean, that can be used, and that's got value in outside the church. You know, there are ways in which this can be developed. And, gee, it's good for us to get involved in non-Christian people or people outside the church. There's so much more available for us if we just get out of a kind of very narrow understanding of what we think ministry is.
So, Deborah and Alan, I know you guys want to eat lunch, and so we want to allow you to do that. They have more presenting to do in the afternoon. But if you guys want to just give us maybe a closing comment on your behalf as you've interacted with us for 24 hours now and you have two more sessions, what would you like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I see a lot of hope in the room. You know, as I'm looking at people's faces, there's a lot of lights going on and a lot of excitement in their face. Sometimes there's a little bit of fear, understandably. But I just say, you know, when I open my session, you know, let's not stop dreaming. Mm-hmm. It's important to dream, you know, to dream about the world that we live in and doing things differently and not being stuck with always having to do things the way things have been. It doesn't mean necessarily radical, you know, and I don't think anyone's suggesting like radical changing in a sense, although sometimes that's required. Mm-hmm. But it's just take little steps towards, you know, what can be the new future. So it doesn't have to freak us out too much.
Yeah,
I would echo that too, as saying like, you know, don't blow up the church. That would not be wise. It's not even good leadership, but you can actually must evolve it and you must take it into a future, you know, where it's viable. You owe it to Jesus more than anyone else. And he wants to build his church. And I think you can work with him if we're just willing to kind of think outside the square. Take a few risks. Find the ninjas in the church that would love to play with you on this kind of stuff. They'd love to. I know every church has got them. Don't try and take everyone. Just try and find the ones that are most likely to be innovative and early adopter types and work with them. And eventually you'll win the rest. 16% is tipping point. In any given system, all you need is 16% of any given system to adopt an idea for the idea to be inevitable. But it's not a random sampling. It's the kind of the early uptake on the growth curve. And find those people and work with them, and budget for it. Allocate something into the future investment wise.
Yeah. Well, thank you both very much for making this the most professional podcast we've ever done.
Yeah, this is great.
And thank you for coming to Ohio Conference, and we really enjoyed it. We look forward to the rest of your afternoon, and we will let you guys go eat.
Thank you. God bless the Mennonites.
Great to be with you.
Thanks for listening to the Ohio Conference Cast. We would like to hear from you. You can email us at ohioconferencecast@gmail.com with any topics or questions you would like us to explore.